Welcome to the Old Langford History Podcast. I'm your host, Sue Harper. If you're new to this podcast, please check out our previous episodes, including the early cabins on Langford Lake, Emily Carr and her time in Langford, the Flying Fireman, and more. I hope you'll enjoy them and add the podcast to your favorites. The podcast is now actually on Twitter, and we have an active community on Facebook, too. In this episode, we will look specifically and extensively at the Gold Rush era of the Gold Stream and the trials and tribulations in the pursuit of that elusive shiny rock for the dream of instant wealth. Now, it must be said, there is no gold in Gold Stream River. Don't go there to pan gold. In fact, it's illegal. Disturbing the salmon-bearing riverbed and removing gravel and dirt, especially in the provincial park, is illegal, as it will kill incubating salmon eggs. Walking in the river is also a no-go. Special permits are required for any activity that involves the riverbed or surrounding vegetation. The destruction of this critical habitat must be avoided. Again, and this is worth repeating, you will find no gold. Rather, show your respect for the delicate salmon run that still exists on the river, for they are the true gold. The Gold Stream River runs alongside the Trans-Canada Highway close to the Malahat. It lies amid the splendor of an old-growth temperate rainforest. Massive trees, some more than 600 years old, majestic waterfalls, flowers, birds, bald eagles, and spawning salmon are just a few of the natural attractions that now draw people to the Gold Stream Provincial Park, which was established in 1958 to protect this incredible habitat, a mere 7.2 kilometers from downtown Langford. Some of the more well-known landforms in the area are Mount Finlayson, Mount Wells, Finlayson Arm Fjord, the waterfall called Little Niagara, as it's almost 156 feet tall, the Gold Stream Falls, also called Upper Gold Stream Falls, and the estuary at the mouth of the Gold Stream River. As I mentioned earlier, this important and cherished river supports critical salmon spawning habitat on southern Vancouver Island. Here along the banks and specially constructed walkways, you can see a world-class salmon spawning stream with thousands of chum salmon returning through the riverbed home between October and December each year. Looking back prehistorically, the Gold Stream was a large river draining the eastern slopes of the Malahat Hills and the westerly slopes of Mount Finlayson and Skirt Mountain. Swelled by runoff from the receding glaciers from the last ice age, the river actually flowed south across the Langford area into the Strait of Juan de Fuca. After cutting through a post-glacial gravel plug about 9,000 years ago, the river actually reversed its flow northwards along the present river channel, which empties now into Finlayson Arm at the end of Saanich Inlet. Before the arrival of Europeans, for thousands of years, families of the North Saanich, South Saanich, and Malahat First Nations fish coho, chinook, and chum stocks in the Gold Stream River, the waters of Saanich Inlet, and adjacent straits. Saanich elders actually recall that in times past they knew exactly when the chum salmon were returning to Saanich Inlet because they could hear the orca whales coming into the inlet to feed on them. After the arrival of Europeans to Vancouver Island, Gold Stream was gradually altered in what I think are significant and damaging ways. Gold mining, road building, dams, logging, the railway, a reservoir, and culverts have impacted the watershed in a multitude of ways. But we're here to talk about the gold rush, so I'll leave those topics and thoughts to future episodes. The Gold Stream gold rush was the result geologically of quartz veins running through the region. As they were slowly weathered by water and wind, gold fragments would be released and find their way down the hills into nearby streams. At the time, it was thought those tiny little traces of gold in the area had their origins somewhere close in the surrounding mountains. Now, gold rushes around British Columbia also played a part on people's psyche. Gold discoveries were not advertised by the Hudson Bay Company, as the fur trade at the time was their main staple and in need of protection. Small quantities of gold were reported in the 1830s, and surveys were secretly being done by the HBC, but it wasn't until 1856 when a large quantity was brought to Fort Kamloops on the mainland that news and gold fever spread like wildfire. The hunt was on for more discoveries. In 1857, the Fraser River on the mainland was teeming with over 30,000 gold miners, mainly from California. Fears that the massive influx of American miners would lead the United States to annex the non-sovereign British territory known as New Caledonia resulted in the founding of British Columbia as a colony on August 2, 1858. In 1861, the Caribou Gold Rush would stoke and grip people's minds with dreams of prosperity. The town of Barkerville, close to Quesnel on the mainland, was established and named after Billy Barker of England, whose claim during the Gold Rush proved to be the richest and eventually the most famous. His claim would yield 37,500 ounces of gold, worth over $88 million in 2022 Canadian dollars. British Columbia would experience many other smaller gold rushes, and Goldstream was one of them. J.D. Pemberton, colonial surveyor and employee of the Hudson Bay Company, investigated the Goldstream area in 1852. He was born in Dublin, Ireland, in 1821. An engineer, surveyor, farmer, and politician, he had offered his services to the Hudson Bay Company in 1850, and at the age of 29, he was hired for a three-year term with an annual salary of £400 as colonial engineer and surveyor of Vancouver Island. Pemberton reached Fort Victoria on June 25, 1851, and immediately started work the next day. Much of Vancouver Island at this time was unexplored and unsurveyed by Europeans. The best charts available were those prepared almost 100 years earlier by Captain Vancouver between 1792 and 1794. Harriet Susan Pemberton described her father's work. "On many occasions, my father's occupation might better have been described as that of an explorer rather than, or in addition to, that of a surveyor. Each man carried a 60-pound pack in addition to arms and ammunition through the dense forest and undergrowth. When ammunition and food both gave out, and when they arrived at their destination weak and exhausted, they were received by the chief of a fierce tribe of Indians, who had gained victory over his enemies. The bloody heads of the vanquished, mounted on poles with long hair waving in the wind, was not an encouraging sight for exhausted men. Pemberton stepped boldly forward, and in the name of the Great White Queen demanded food and canoes to convey him and his party back to Victoria. Receipts were given in the form of leaves torn from his notebook, and these were later duly honored by the Hudson Bay Company." That quote was from the book written by Harriet Susan Pemberton entitled My Father, Joseph Pemberton, 1821-93. On his return to Victoria, after surveying and detailing the topography and natural resources, specifically from Souk to Nanaimo in 1852, to his delight, he predicted that Vancouver Island, once fully explored, would be found to be a gold-producing country. But his words at the time were left largely ignored. It wasn't until about 6 years later, in 1858, Royal Engineer Peter J. Leach found traces of gold in the banks of a stream which emptied into the Indian's Arm and named it Gold Creek. He had been prospecting in the area for agricultural lands, mineral resources, and general knowledge of the area. On August 27, 1859, the editor of the Victoria Gazette wrote of the rumors circulating around the city and recounted a story from a prospector. "We started from Victoria, taking the Craigflower Road and keeping it until we reached Mr. Langford's farm. We crossed his large grain field and took a trail which leads to Langford Lake. Here, the trail winds around the brow of a mountain called Mount Skirt for a mile or more. We descended the mountain on the north side of the creek, which apparently runs from Lake Finlayson Inlet. This creek is about 12 miles distant from Victoria, 20 feet wide and about 10 miles long. We prospected and found gold everywhere in good prospects. In the morning, claims were staked and the trip back to Victoria began. We met maybe 500 people on the way to the new diggings on our return, and there were probably 20 the time we were there. The paper also noted that many prospectors had returned back to Victoria. After searching, they doubted such reports as they were unable to find any color. The paper was also very suspicious of the report. Quote, "The most silly and idle rumors were circulated all the day, and in several bar rooms, suspicious collections of specimens of coarse gold were exhibited as having come from the new diggings." That was from August 27, 1859. Things went quiet in the area until on August 22, 1862, when the Daily Colonist announced a small find. "Fine gold is reported to have been found by a party engaged in cutting the trail from Langford Lake to Cowichan District." And yet another indication was reported in December of that same year. "Gold diggings on Vancouver Island. A rumor was in circulation last night that $5 diggings had been discovered within 25 miles of Victoria." There were no further reports of activity in the region until April 3, 1863, when the Daily British Colonist reported three cattlemen on their way to the Cowichan Valley saw two men encamped on the Golden River, apparently carrying out mining operations. The governor of Vancouver Island, James Douglas, wanted to promote the finding of gold and announced a huge reward if a producing area was found. The proclamation stated that to any person or persons who shall first discover a profitable gold field within the colony of Vancouver Island and make known and describe to the colonial government the site and limits of the tract of land comprised in his or her discovery, there shall be paid the sum of £1,000 sterling. Governor James Douglas recognized what he saw as huge benefits. Profit was the number one priority. The governor's son-in-law, Dr. John Sebastian Helmkin, recalled, "The governor attached great importance to those mainland discoveries and thought it meant a great change and a busy time. He spoke of Victoria rising to be a great city and of its value." But curiously enough, this conversation did not make much of an impression. Undaunted, Douglas organized a party to investigate the mineral resources of the island. A group of four miners began in the immediate area of Victoria, and after less than 2 weeks, returned on October 17, 1863, with news of placer gold diggings 12 to 15 miles from the city. As reported by the Victoria Evening Express on that date, gold was found, but the diggings were soon abandoned from an overflow of water in the creek, which stopped the work before the miners had time to get to the bedrock. The party reported finding coarse gold in the banks and bars of the stream in sufficient quantities to pay at least $5 to $7 a day to a prospector. The editor of the Evening Express praised Governor Douglas on the success of his expedition and on his administration's rejuvenation of Vancouver Island. He further honored His Excellency by proposing that the locality be known as the Douglas Diggings. Goldstream presents the appearance of a thorough mining locality and possesses every facility for working. The claim taken up by the governor's party might be very easily sluiced. We're satisfied that the new diggings will soon attract crowds of miners. We cannot conclude without expressing how deeply the colonists are indebted to His Excellency Governor Douglas for the fitting out and supplying the successful prospectors in the expedition, which is likely to lead to great results. Such enthusiastic reports of gold finds in a river only 10 miles west of Victoria led to false hopes that Vancouver Island would see yet another Fraser River bonanza. The stampede of gold prospectors towards Goldstream began. Today we would consider getting to Goldstream an easy and short journey, but back in the early 1860s, it was an arduous journey and easy to get lost. As reported in the Daily Colonist, a good many did not succeed in finding their way to the proper locality, some going down the trail towards Souk, others being unable to follow the proper trail, losing their way in the woods. The optimism and hope continued to be reported. Prospectors continued to purchase gear, travel to the area, and stake claims in search of riches. As reported, intelligence received yesterday from the new diggings near Langford Lake was of highly encouraging nature. There were supposed to be about 300 people on the creek, and considerable excitement existed. One person who visited the spot informed us that he saw several pans of gravel prospecting from each of them, turning out several specks of gold. Some Frenchmen located at the head of the creek obtained a dollar from three pans of dirt. That sum was offered and refused for it. Several caribou miners are at work yesterday, and their opinions after washing some of the gravel was that the diggings would pay between $3 and $5 a day. We learned from other parties that visited the spot of various prospects having been obtained the average of about 8 or 10 colors to the pan. Claims were said to have been staked all the way down to the bridge. To give these wages some perspective, standard pay for a laborer at the time was about a dollar a day. Rumors of finding large amounts of gold at Goldstream were at a fever pitch. Despite the lack of real proof and evidence, the local newspapers continued to report almost anything a prospector would repeat to them. In October 1863, the British colonists reported, "Information of an exciting nature was brought to town last night by Mr. Biggs, a partner in Pickett and Company's claim, situated about a mile above the Discovery claim at the Forks. Mr. Biggs states that fine prospects had been struck on their claim. In the 2 days they had taken out $23, and yesterday from seven pans of dirt they washed out $9. We give this report with considerable reservation, having no desire to inflate the public mind. A few hours will suffice to test the accuracy of the rumor, and until then, we can only indulge in the earnest hope the statement may be verified to the fullest extent." Claims had officially been staked in the area. Companies were rapidly formed, usually between friends who wanted to strike it rich fast. Every day, reports appeared in the local newspapers. It seemed mainly in the attempts to keep the rumors alive. Any small alleged find made the news, no matter what its authenticity. This could have been due largely in an attempt to keep prospectors in the area to spend money to buy supplies such as equipment, food, clothing, and other goods. It was actually the local merchants that were striking it rich. Beyond prospecting in Goldstream, there was also some acknowledgement of the area's beauty. As reported in the Daily Colonist, "News from the island diggings during the last 2 days has brought us nothing of interest, but 200 to 300 Victorians, including many of the fair sex, have visited the locality. Indeed, the short distance from the city and the beautiful and varied nature of the scenery which the trail presents will make the diggings, should they prove sufficiently lucrative to keep the miners at work, a favorite place of resort for all who have the time and means to luxuriate in carriage and horse exercise." While hopes remained high, there was continued skepticism in the potential of the gold stream. A full report of activities was given on October 29th. Part of the report stated, "There are only 4 claims doing anything, which must eventually prove whether there is anything worth seeking in this place or not. But I think it will be all deep work, and nothing I could trace impressed me with any idea of surface diggings. Every foot of ground favorable to present operations is taken up. I think it would be very unwise of anyone or any parties starting afresh until the present ones have proved their claims. About 25 men out there all told. Plenty of excellent refreshments in the liquor line, and also in the eating. Mr. Ingram saw some colored men from the North Fork who had found the bedrock at 12 feet and got no more than 2 cents to the pan. Many didn't want to put in the time, effort, and hard labor required when there wasn't that ultimate large strike to send them running to Goldstream. As reported, men are ready enough to go as far as the land office to record a claim, but they hesitate to undertake any physical labor of prospecting. They are content to wait and see what others do." By December 1863, it was becoming apparent that the gold in the gold stream had been more of hope and dreams than fact. In July 1864, the editor of the British Colonist wrote an extensive column on Goldstream, his frustration and the frustration of the people of Victoria of not finding gold in Goldstream was very evident. In part, it stated, "In regard to the operations of washing the gravel for gold, I do not believe it will pay the very lowest price of labor. Whilst good credit is due to those who have gone spiritedly to work and have spent their time and money in Goldstream, if men had devoted half the time telling the truth about the country, instead of giving florid descriptions, telling half-truths, and manufacturing gigantic falsehoods, Vancouver Island would be a different place from what it is today." Skepticism towards the Goldstream prospectors continued to be reported, as no gold of any true volume or value was found. In the British Colonist, 1864, it was reported, "The public now have become so skeptical regarding the mineral productions of Goldstream that nothing but ocular demonstration will now convince them of the existence of any gold." Most of the remaining prospectors at Goldstream were frustrated by their lack of any success. Then, in mid-1864, payable quantities of placer gold was discovered along the Leech River to the west of Goldstream towards Souk. Prospectors rushed off to this new area, abandoning and declaring the Goldstream diggings worthless. Over the following year, all interest in striking the mother lode of gold was concentrated on the Leech River. Goldstream was officially declared dead. Some prospecting did continue through 1896, despite government mining engineers visiting the area and declaring that there was no gold in Goldstream. All the high hopes of getting rich had amounted to nothing. Remnants of gold mining can still be seen scattered in the hills surrounding Goldstream River. While walking the trails of Goldstream Park, you might actually find some old shafts. Beside one shaft in particular, there's a plaque. It reads, "This tunnel and nearby shaft are probably evidence of a minor gold rush in the Goldstream area during 1863. Gold was $17.85 per ounce." The amount of misinformation that abounded through newspapers and gossip at the time was staggering, especially when you consider they didn't have social media like we do today to spread such false news. But their efforts left a history in the area that can be explored by us and still visibly seen and imagined. The dreams of striking it rich on the Goldstream River were just that, dreams.